Welcome back to Radio Rothbard. I'm Ryan McMakin. I'm a senior editor with the Mises Institute. And with me today is Tho Bishop, my associate editor. And let's talk a little bit about recessions. Often a boring topic, I know, for many. But this has been a real interesting case where the definition, the topic of recession itself, not just what are the effects of a recession, but is there a recession? What's the political definition of a recession? This is suddenly a very political topic that, I'm noticing is like featured on a lot of these political sites that normally don't really talk about this sort of thing. And I think the origins of this then comes in from, it was just a few weeks ago that Janet Yellen, political operative for the administration, who formerly posed as a dispassionate economist, but is now clearly just a partisan hack. Yellen apparently was trying to preemptively draw attention away from the idea that the economy stinks. So she went on Meet the Press and she started talking about how, well, some people say that if an economy shrinks for two quarters in a row, then there's a recession, because she was expecting the new numbers to come out on GDP and to show declining GDP for the second quarter in a row. And so they knew then that a lot of people would start calling that a recession, because historically that's very often been the case. And so it's, the memo apparently went out that we got to do something to make sure people don't start calling this a recession, just for, because that's bad optics. So she goes on meet the Press and says, well, yeah, some people say that's a recession, but that's not the technical definition of a recession. So now suddenly we got people talking about, what is the technical definition of a recession? The sort of thing that I'd never heard before, this debate over what the technical definition of recession was. And this was a new thing the administration has introduced. And then they were asked questions about it at the next press conference at the White House. And Corinne Jean-Pierre, the spokeswoman there, saying, well, that's not the technical definition of a recession. And it just kind of went from there with all these people saying, well, it's not really a recession. And it just seemed, it seems silly to me, though, this idea that, because what was heavily implied behind this whole thing about how we're not technically in a recession was this idea that things are fine. It's wrong to talk about things being in a recession, because things just aren't as bad as you imagine. So it would be silly to talk about it as a recession. It's not a recession. We are not in a recession. We're in an expansion, and things are fantastic. And so, clearly, right, this was a blatant political attempt to seize control of vocabulary to try and prevent the press from using the word recession repeatedly in the media. It doesn't seem to have worked very well. If anything, it's kind of highlighted and really just spurred people to talk about recession more. But the politics of it are quite remarkable.
Right. I mean, there is this sort of Orwellian, like, I mean, I saw like Wikipedia was changing the definition on the fly and like locking out, you know, the way that you could edit these sort of things. I mean, just seeing it play out in a real time, that aspect of the degree to which they went about falling lockstep within the regime, you know, trying to act like the entire history, right, of using this term, you know, it doesn't matter, right? So that itself is interesting, but it's secondary to, I think, the larger story here, as you mentioned, is that you very much have people in D.C., people in New York. You know, I've seen some articles talking about how this is a vibe recession, right? That really, if you look at the technical details of the economy and all these measurements, then there was a Paul Krugman tweet earlier this week about how, like, really the issue is that the economy was doing too good under Biden. And that's what was driving up these prices and yada, yada, yada. And like there is this very real disconnect between what those people are seeing utilizing certain various measures and really the not only, I think, the current experience of, you know, Americans, you know, that are still dealing with a cost of living increases, still dealing with other issues there, but also the complete disconnect from where the global economy is. As if all these major supply chain issues, energy issues are being resolved. And it's like, no, like there's still, you know, a hot war going on in Ukraine. There is a global economic war going on with Russia. We have mounting tensions within China. We have inflationary pressures within Europe and an ECB that can't follow the Fed's lead in rising interest rates because of how much crap debt they have in their system. You know, their complete disconnect. Like, it seemed to me almost that you would want to be kind of overselling stuff right now to kind of like, you know, try to use this as a point. I mean, thankfully, from their perspective, they're not going down this route. But like, I mean, this is almost kind of a rally the troops sort of moment, not a, hey, everything's fine. And if you think otherwise, then, you know, we're going to change the definitions on you. This again, it goes, I think, in a variety of ways, this complete disconnect between a certain class of people and everyone else. This is just another manifestation of it. And again, particularly after the entire like, you know, inflationist transitory debacle last year, the fact that they are so confident in doubling down on these sort of word games is again, just is fascinating how little they seem to learn.
Yeah, the word games game is quite remarkable, right? Well, first of all, we'll talk about how inflation is transitory, and then we'll prevent it from getting entrenched. And of course, that all came after they said just outright, we will prevent inflation from exceeding 2%. And then, of course, obviously, that was a miserable failure. And then we started to pretend that inflation didn't really exist, and then it would be gone fast. And then once it was clear it existed, then, well, we have everything under control. And then once it became clear that the economy was extremely weak, well, then there's not really a recession. And so I think that's one thing that we need to mention here for sure is when we're quibbling over what is the technical definition of recession, you're granting vast powers to a small number of economists and policymakers. You're playing their game. You're accepting their terms of the debate because by invoking this whole notion of a technical definition of a recession, what you're basically saying is that eight economists at the National Bureau of Economic Research get to decide if there's a recession or not. And then we just accept that. And then our definition of how the economy performs all depends on what this tiny number of wealthy old people at prestigious universities say about whether there's a recession or not. And then, of course, when there's not a recession, then it's an expansion. Everything's fine. So all we have to do then is we could point out this graph, right? You look at these charts. If you go to Fred and the Federal Reserve's St. Louis website, right, which we all use, is all these graphs you can get. And a lot of the time, the graphs have a shaded area for recessions, and you can see where the official recessions are. And say, oh, look at how these things turned around here. Fed policy must have worked great. I mean, the whole narrative is being shaped by this tiny number of influential economists. And by just simply saying, well, it's not an official recession, what you're saying is, yes, I accept this economist's definition to tell me whether things are going well or not. This, of course, is a completely new and invented idea, right? Jim Grant talks about this, having written that book on the 1921 recession. He's thought about it a lot, pre-modern recessions, essentially. And you had a concept of times are good or times are bad. People were doing well, people were doing poorly. This idea that you could give a tiny number of economists somewhere the power to determine things are good now, things are bad now. And if you think you're doing poorly, hey, Rube, you just don't understand how good you have it. You don't understand how well things are going. It's all in your imagination. You're just feeling bad vibes. So the whole thing is just a huge web of propaganda. And people should feel free to define recession however they want. This is, of course, how it works in social science in the real world in general. People don't always agree on terms. There's not somebody out there determining what everything means, what every phenomenon means right down to the last detail. Even in physical science, that's not true, and certainly not true in something as inexact as economics. And so I completely reject this whole idea that we have to sit around and wait for the NBER to decide, are we technically in recession? And of course, who cares? I say we're in non-technical recession if I feel like it. Now, of course, My own personal opinion is that actually maybe things are arguably not in recession, even colloquially understood. It could be a situation like we had in 2007 when the economy was just getting worse and the reading started showing things moving downward, but that the real bad news came later. That could entirely be the case right now. But we won't even know when this technical recession definition comes down for many months. And what experience shows also is that people, Fed chairmen, people like Bernanke, people like Powell, they always say, even after you're well into the technical recession, they always say there's no recession. The Fed's not predicting a recession. Bernanke was saying that in 2008, after the U.S. was already in recession, according to the NBER measure. So all of this is just BS that that you can clearly see that whether I say we're in a recession or not depends on political considerations from my lunch I had with the president last week. And so that's what it really comes down to. So people should absolutely not feel constrained in whether they call it a recession or not as a matter of opinion that's coming out of the NBER. That's just their opinion. In their opinion, the recession started in December 2007 and ended in 2009. That's an interesting opinion. That's something we can work with, but that's fundamentally all it is.
And of course, this is kind of just a byproduct for, you know, the clown world monetary policy system where the projection of confidence is itself a direct policy tool, right? And so the Fed kind of is in this situation where it doesn't matter the cost to its own credibility. They are so desperate to project, hey, good times are ahead. Hey, things are a lot better than you seem. Because like, you know, they need that to kind of prop up everything, or else they fear, oh, well, if the psychology of consumers goes down, well, then that is actually the real trigger, right? Like that's the animal spirit they have to worry about that can actually bring about everything bad, right? And so this is why you had so much focus, you know, again, don't worry about inflation last year. It's not going to last long. And then it's like, oh, well, it's the concern about inflation that is driving inflation further because people are buying up stuff now out of concerns in the long run, right? I mean, they themselves this week had to, I think Powell was talking about getting away from forward guidance and yet as a policy tool. And yet they are also kind of still doing forward guidance by saying, don't worry. And I think this actually goes to another reason why they're so scared of the R word, is that the Fed wants to continue tightening, right? They want to continue with the interest rate increases. And if we're in a recession, it's harder to justify that from a certain sort of policy perspective, right? And so if you concede that we are in a technical recession, it limits the policy tools of the Fed that, and to Powell's credit, again, I think we were both on the record not expecting Powell to be as aggressive as he has been to date. Again, not far enough, perhaps, but you know, again, I did not expect, you know, 2-3 quarters of interest rate increases back to back. So you have in Powell someone who clearly is still wanting to use kind of the bazooka in the opposite way of the very, you know, very much the easing policies of the past. And I think this is another aspect to this where they have to continue to play these word games in order to allow the Fed to engage in everything as to the extent that they would like. But again, though, the technicals out here, I don't care how tight the job market is. And this is one of the points that they keep making, like, oh, well, anyone can go out there and get a job. And that is different than you know, things have been historically in very rough patches. But I mean, that doesn't take away from, again, the massive increases in cost of living out there, the stresses out there. And again, the global economic environment, which, you know, is I think a lot more murky and a lot more turbulent than even the stuff that we're facing here. And again, just you're not going to fix that by redefining things on enough scale. And just all of this is just feeding into this gradual erosion that we've been talking about for quite a while of just the distrust in the institutions of the regime. And again, when people are actively making fun of, and again, I think this is one of the beauties of kind of the, you know, this brouhaha over the recession word, is that the silliness of it, while again, that does kind of overlook, you know, what we're really talking about when we're talking about, you know, the health of the economy. It is so blatantly Orwellian. It is so in your face that, you know, I think that continues kind of opening people's eyes and to questioning, you know, is this financial system really, you know, really full of experts that know what they're doing, or politicized clowns that are doing everything they can to pretend that they have control of things?
Right. If it were just a discussion about what does recession mean, you'd be like, okay. So it's a good faith discussion. But there have just been so many things in recent years where you're constantly being told, oh, this word doesn't mean what it meant 5 minutes ago, like the word vaccine, for example. We're going to change that. And we're going to have the dictionary just change it on a whim. Another one was sexual preference. Remember that during some hearings over the Supreme Court where, I don't know, I think it was Coney Barrett used the phrase in some context. And they were like, no, sexual preference is an outdated, bigoted term. And then the friends of the left who worked at Merriam-Webster or whatever went in and changed the definition of sexual preference to include the term pejorative, that suddenly sexual preference was a pejorative term, like overnight. And so when you're looking at the whole thing over what does recession mean, you're like, oh, this is just the latest attempt to rewrite the term. Now, in one of my recent columns on this whole phenomenon, I pointed out that a recession is not always synonymous with two quarters of declining economic growth consecutively. Because if you look back at the 2001 recession, that actually never happens. There's not actually two consecutive quarters of economic decline. So that was a case where a recession was declared after the fact, but it didn't actually fit that decision. However, that's in the other direction, right? Where they declared a recession without two quarters of decline. Are there cases where there's two quarters of decline and they don't declare it a recession? I couldn't find any cases. So Yellen was right in that the definition isn't the words recession isn't synonymous with two quarters of consecutive decline. But in every case I could find, when you have that happen, you have after the fact, a recession be declared. So you're looking at that, people are reading that. It's just as you say, right? People are like, you know, this is just the latest smoke and mirrors job that the regime is trying to pull over my eyes. And so, of course, people then are skeptical. And I applaud them, even if they're not going back and looking at, gee, what happened in the 2001 recession? And did that match up with the exact definition? The impulse is correct. The impulse is to think that they're charlatans trying to fool you because it seems so obvious. And just the spokespeople that they've deployed to talk about this. And then you got. I think Brian is his first name, Deese, one of these economic advisors from the White House. Just a lawyer. I don't know. I guess in Washington, it's pretty easy to convince people that you should be an economic advisor because I have a law degree. I don't know where that came from, but that's how they work in Washington, I guess. And so he's up there saying, well, yeah, the economy's, there's a lot of challenges due to rising prices, but it's not like there's a famine or anything here, like some parts of the world, which earned a lot of chortles from other parts of the world. What a weird thing to bring up. Yeah, you know, sure, the economy's got problems, but I mean, some parts of the world have famine. It's like, look over there. Look how lousy things are in Zimbabwe. Things here are fine by comparison. Like, boy, talk about a low bar that you're setting. But that's apparently how this administration runs. And so I think you can only do so much of that, and people start to think, well, it's all just BS. I can't trust anything these people are saying about it. Is there a recession? Is there not a recession? I can only now go off my personal experience, is what people are saying. And that's how we should really be measuring things, are your real wages going up or down? And the data is clear that in the private sector, these real wages have been going down, I think, for like 12 months in a row. Maybe 14 months was what the most recent data said. Real wages, that's just meaning, right? Yeah, their wages are going up by 5-6% year over year. Oh, but oops, the inflation rate is 8.9%. So I guess my wages are actually falling behind. And that's what a lot of people are experiencing. And then what we got the people in the administration saying is, well, you know, at least those people have jobs. Well, yeah, that's great. Of course, you want to have a job and have some income, even if that's shrinking income rather than no income. Which, by the way, calls into question the whole argument all this time about how you shouldn't ever let wages fall, which is a long time sort of argument of the left, is that, you know, there should be minimum wages, wages should not be allowed to fall, and we should manage the economy in such a way. Whereas Austrians and libertarians have long said, well, you should let real wages fall, and that would avoid unemployment. So you wouldn't have the added problem of unemployment. You would just have falling wages for a period until the economy adjusted. But suddenly now, if you're speaking Bidenese, now declining wages are fine, as long as people still have jobs. But even now, the jobs data is starting to catch up with the previous realities. The job openings data rolled over pretty clearly. Some of the biggest declines we've seen in job openings since 2008. Initial claims for unemployment insurance have been going up since March. A lot of weakness there. And then if you look at the household data, because there's two different surveys of employment. There's the establishment survey where they survey huge employers, and that's based on the number of jobs. And then there's the household survey, which is based on the number of people employed. And so, yep, there was continued growth in the establishment survey, but not growth for 4 months. There's been no growth for 4 months in the household survey. What that means is there's more jobs, but not more employed people, suggesting that people are taking on a second job to cover their declining wages now, but the number of actual people employed is not actually going up, which doesn't help, by the way, overall productivity in the economy, which doesn't help price inflation. And so we can debate this all day, and I'm old enough to remember, because I was a teenager at the time, the debate over the economy in the 1992 presidential election, and that was the era of, it's the economy, stupid, under the Clinton campaign. And so it was just endless debates looking at economic numbers over, is the economy getting better? Is the economy getting worse? Is George W. Bush responsible for a recessionary economy? Or is the economy fine? Which is, of course, what the Bush, George H.W. Bush people were constantly arguing, is that things aren't as bad as you think, which is just what incumbents will always tell you. But of course, we didn't know if there was a technical official recession until months later. They did say there was. In those days of 1992. But that, you could debate this stuff all day long. So what it really comes down to is just, do people think they're doing better or not? And a lot of people don't think they are, based on real stuff. And the fact that GDP, which of course includes government spending and a bunch of other shenanigans in the numbers that you could be showing growth, and say the economy was just zero and didn't go down at all. Oh, good, we avoided recession. Growth is 0.1%. Wow, what a party you should be throwing, as if that's some great achievement on the part of the regime. So you can just see how you could slice and dice these numbers all day, and just how ultimately it has virtually nothing to do in the real world with how people's personal situations are in terms of their personal budgets, their ability to send children to college, to pay all their bills, and so on.
And of course, contentness with mediocre economic growth is something that we've been dealing with for, you know, over 12 years now, right? You know, if we go back, you know, after after the Great Recession of 08, 09, that time frame, you know, we had the slowest economic growth out of a financial crisis in American history. And so we're dealing with a very long era. And within that, I mean, a big part of the reason why Americans did not feel like bad times after that were stock prices, right? The biggest growth of American personal wealth came from investments. It came from reinflating the housing market. It came from, again, all the money that that was being pumped into the stock market as the direct result of our monetary policy. And now, like, and when you consider, you know, real wage growth was never that high. I mean, it really didn't. It took a little bit of increase after some of, you know, more of the supply side sort of change of the Trump administration with tax policy and regulatory regime sort of stuff. But, you know, we've really been dealing with this sort of stuff for well over a decade, a very, very slow real economic growth masqueraded by massive increases in financial investments. And again, when you look at this entire environment, when you consider the degree to which those investments have been grounded, have been absolutely propped up by a interest rate environment that no longer exists, and that the Fed is continuing to highlight, hey, we're going to continue to be aggressive on this issue. Again, like this is why, again, this entire attempt right now to downplay this. Again, if I were to take myself out of my perspective of regime critic and try to put it in the role of regime defender, like you're setting yourself up. Like, what's the end game here? Right? Like, how long? It's exactly what we saw last year, the transitory inflation thing. How long can they maintain this facade of, hey, everything is hunky-dory, and, you know, if you plebs just looked at the right definitions, then you would realize how great you have it, be grateful. And it's no. And again, like, things aren't going to get any better in this regard. Like, this is, we're not set up for some big Biden boom. And now they're you know, pushing for you know, a new round of tax increases and you know, a major federal spending plan that's going to do nothing but make these problems even worse. Again, what the end game here is, I'm still not fully convinced, because even from, you know, the narrative, like, oh, well, you know, you've got that the great reset that is just ready to you know, impoverish us all, and we're not going to own anything, and we'll like it. One of the reasons why I find these times long run, you know, optimistic in spite of the short term pain, is that, again, it is the faith in this broader network of institutions. Right, the faith in the Fed is not going to be improved by these blatant lies. And if you don't trust your own financial institutions, if you don't trust your own network, the ability of larger giants, you know, international organizations, to build off of that, I think does become undermined. So it's going to be very interesting to see what is the backlash to it. Again, politically, I'm still not seeing any real demonstration that Republicans know how to compete in this area, right? Like, they still don't have any real solutions outside of critiquing Biden. How this plays out politically is a different question entirely. I tend to think that, you know, a continued decrease in material well-being will lead to some political shift, but then if the Republicans own that, you know, next year, what does that matter, right? So how this plays up in terms of politics, in terms of some of these direct things, I'm not quite sure about, but I do think that, again, this people they might not understand the complexities of, you know, the technical definition of a recession, why it matters, all these different aspects, but they do realize, you know, when they're being treated like fools. And I think that is increasingly, like, that I think is eroding the legitimacy of these institutions more than anything else, even more so than the pain at the pump, things like that. It's just the content with which they treat you, and again, try to tell you, hey, things are doing so much better than the experiences that you're really feeling. It takes a whole lot of indoctrination. It takes a whole lot of energy to be able to convince people that what they see in front of them is not really there.
And we covered this in a previous episode, right? But we're just lucky that it's not the alleged free market party that is the Republicans that were in the White House during this economic collapse. Yeah, I wouldn't call it a collapse, decline, this period of decline. Because, as you just noted, they don't have a separate agenda in terms of how to deal with the economy, the GOP, right? It's very much a bipartisan effort. And it's hard to imagine, right, back in the days of the global financial crisis, would John McCain have had different policies from Obama in terms of all the bailouts and the big spending? And absolutely not. McCain would have taken the Washington way of doing things, and it would have been big spending. There would have been no difference in fiscal policy, and certainly no difference in monetary policy. And then you could see that also in what a bipartisan effort it is, and the fact that, would you have expected things to be substantially different under Trump than under Biden? I mean, just look at how Trump behaved with the lockdowns and the $6 trillion in deficit spending that added up there, and all the money printing. And that even before COVID, Trump was constantly trolling Powell on Twitter, telling him to print more money. And that, Powell, you're not printing enough money. You don't love America. You don't want a strong economy. If you want a strong economy, print more money. And Powell, I don't think that Powell caved to that. I don't think he started printing money because Trump told him to. I think he did it because he just figured it would work. And that had been Fed policy for years and years, was to constantly say that the economy was strong, but oh, by the way, we're not going to allow interest rates to rise. And oh, by the way, we're not going to do anything about the portfolio. Powell didn't introduce that. And the economy was already humming along in 2016. They should have been, you know, using their own rules. They should have been clawing back the portfolio then, but chose not to. And then in 2018, then the numbers really start to take off because you're an inflationary boom, a monetary inflationary boom. But then you had all these Trump supporters saying, look how good the economy is in 2019. This is all due to Trump's free market ways. And thank goodness Democrats not in here. That's what you expect to happen when you print a lot of money. And you looked at Trump's humongous non-recession period peacetime deficits of $800 billion. Unprecedented, that sorts of deficit, which of course requires a lot of money printing to have those sorts of deficits and keep interest rates on government debt down. So that was all happening on Trump's watch. And we all know what would have happened, since Trump doesn't know anything about how economies work or anything like that. His advisors would have told him, just keep printing the money. Just keep the deficit spending going. That's what would have been happening in 2021. And then it would have got run out of control, just like it is now. Yes, the energy sector would have been better off, and some of the regulations would have been scaled back. Those things would have helped for sure, but it wouldn't have made a real difference in terms of business cycle dynamics. And it's not this whole, you know, this is Bidenomics at work. No, it's Washingtonomics is what it is. It's what you would expect from all of these people who are in and out of the White House, and there's no difference there. So yeah, you need a real change in ideology and understanding of how the economy works. So as you say, though, a good first step is knowing that the other side's trying to hoodwink you, that they're gaslighting you, that they're just defining anything to make it look like their policies work. And so that does seem to be the situation we're at now. But it's clear these people haven't learned anything. They're just trying to come up with what will bailouts look like this time around, or how much will the portfolio increase? Because, yep, Powell stayed the course a little bit. His interest rates have gone up a bit. But as I did in a column a couple of weeks ago, Powell still, unless he does something different, he's still just Arthur Burns. He's not anywhere near Paul Volcker. And Powell even admitted this in his last press conference. He was saying, well, if you don't really do something about inflation early on, then it just gets worse later on. And that's what happened with Burns. Burns was always looking for an excuse to embrace easy money. So he would maybe allow interest rates to go up a little bit. Things would improve in terms of inflation. Say, okay, we solved the problem. Back to the usual easy money policy. And then it would just build on itself yet again. And then it was all out of control by the early 1980s. And that could be the way we're going right now, is that, oh, we did a little something to bring inflation down now, but it didn't really address the issue. So now in, 2025, we're going to be talking about the next Fed chairman or whatever. What's he going to do now that inflation still hasn't gone away? And in the meantime, then, it's just going to be, another quarter of weak growth? Because as you mentioned, right, since 2000, where's all the robust growth? We got a little bit in 2019, right at the end of an inflationary boom, because it was already clear by late 2019, the yield curve was inverting. It was clear there was going to be a recession even without COVID. And there's a lot of concern then if you were paying attention. So you're already at the end of that cycle right there. But if you looked at the overall numbers, median household income, median personal income, those sorts of things were really going nowhere between 2000 and 2014 or so. They only really kind of broke out of that band after about 2016, 2017, and then really started to increase 2018, 2019. So what you had was people, if you were in your 20s and early 30s, you were trying to raise a family from, say, about 2002 to 2014, you were not really making it. You weren't seeing a lot of improvement, even though you were being constantly told that this was a recovery, that things were going great. What you did see, as you noted, was the asset price increases. So if you were a billionaire, you already owned a lot of research or real estate. You already owned a lot of stocks. You saw big gains there. But for regular people, first-time homebuyers, there weren't nearly the gains. So again, this whole idea, this big aggregate idea of, oh, there was some economic growth. There was 1% economic growth year over year. Aren't things wonderful? This just doesn't apply to a lot of regular people.
Of course, if you're a single homeowner, you can't really take advantage of your house. I mean, yeah, I guess you have refinancing things like that. You know, you can take leverage it. But you know, if all the other houses are going up, then you can't. You know, it's difficult to really take advantage of you know that there. But I think it's actually playing into a role into you know why you know you're seeing with some of the movements of people with you know. When you can sell a house in California and then buy the same amount of house in Florida, same price. That's why I think it's gonna be interesting to see with rising interest rates, you know, what are some of the markets that perform better on like the housing front than others? Because I can tell you right now, the demand here in Bay County, Florida is still very, very tight, regardless of, again, significant increases on the mortgage side of things. But yeah, I mean, we are dealing with generation. I mean, with again, like decades now of really bad policies. And that's kind of the funny thing about this is that as bad as, you know, for all of the attention that the redefinition of recession has gotten to people, like, it's so much worse than they recognize, right? You look at the way that they change some of the money aggregates, right? You know, some of the data they do release, right? You know, they've been changing and eliminating certain sort of data plots and things like that, right? There's so much that, and this also goes to why, like, in the entire sort of strategy out there of, oh, well, you know, we can just pass a monetary rule and we can have some really high-minded reform package for monetary policy. And you know, that's going to solve everything. It's like, no, we're dealing with institutions that have incentives to manipulate language, you know, and to manipulate data. Like the idea that it's going to be restrained by, you know, some sort of scholarly rule, I think is a little unrealistic going forward.
Well, we better go ahead and wrap up with that then. Let that be the last word for this episode of Radio Rothbard. Thank you for listening in, and we'll be back again next week with another episode, and we'll see you next time.